You're listening to The Green on Delaware Public Media. And I'm Tom Byrne. The state's largest teachers union, the Delaware State Education Association, recently released the results of its latest teacher satisfaction survey. That survey, conducted via email by Emma White Research, connected with 1,460 active DSEA members between July 11th and 18th to take their temperature on a variety of topics, including teacher pay and working conditions. The survey produced mixed results, and this week we sat down with DSEA President Stephanie Ingram to delve into those results and what they tell us about how teachers in the First State are feeling. Before we dig into the actual results, I'm curious why surveys like this are important. What does DSEA hope to draw from the information you get by doing surveys like this one?
Well, we have more than 14,000 members statewide over a variety of job classifications, and we're just looking to try to get the most information we can from that number of members. It's impossible for us to talk to every one of them, so surveys like this help us to kind of do a little snapshot of what our members are thinking and how they're feeling about the things that are important to them.
So let's talk about the top line results, which show overall job satisfaction at 80%. That's up from 74% in 2024. 65% of educators now say they plan to stay in the profession for at least the next couple of years, compared to 62% in 2024. And your organization has suggested that part of these slight improvements in the numbers are thanks to Delaware's efforts to improve teacher pay. Is there a reason why you feel like that connection's part of what's driving this improved satisfaction from teachers?
Well, I think what we're seeing is the idea that if educators are being paid more, that they're more willing to stay in the jobs. Just like you said, it's a small piece to the puzzle. We're looking to see what educators need to improve job satisfaction, and this is what we know is one thing we can do to help our educators want to stay in the positions that they're in.
And part of what Delaware has done is given pay raises to teachers over the last couple of years. They've also made the commitment to get to a $60,000 starting salary for teachers by fiscal year 2028. Is there any concern on DSEA's part that the state's current financial situation, some of the issues that they're facing, both created by the federal government and some at the state level, could impact teacher pay negatively going forward and maybe slow progress to that starting salary goal?
That's a great question. We are slightly concerned about, you know, the outlook for the next few years, but we're hoping that legislators will keep their promises to educators and to students and to find the money to make sure that the pay increases are funded in the way that we expect them to be.
One of the other things is the difference between the state share of that pay and the local district share. The state share obviously has gone up over the last couple of years with those commitments from lawmakers, not seeing necessarily the same on the local district share level. Are there ways to address that, particularly in the wake of property reassessment? Because there's certainly perhaps less of a appetite for a referendum. Are there other ways to try and attack the local share of teacher pay?
Well, I'm sure there are, and that's something that we're interested in having the conversations around. You know, you mentioned referendum, reassessment. We just need to take a look at what locals are doing now to make up their 30% of the funding for our educators, and then to see what exactly can they do. I'm not exactly sure about, you know, the monies behind it and how they can maybe move monies around or how locals can get more revenue into the system. But it's something that we're looking to sit down and really talk about.
Is part of that conversation referendum reform? We've heard a lot about that maybe there's something just structurally wrong with the process itself. Is that something DSEA pays attention to and has some thoughts on?
We absolutely do. We think of the idea of referendum reform as something that we need to start to really think about in a different way, because we know that the process doesn't work in the way that it should. We are the only state that does referendums for capital and
the operating, yeah.
Operating.
Yep.
Costs. So we need to think about what that looks like and how we can do that differently and what it looks like to not have to go to taxpayers repeatedly to ask them for more money to make sure that we're doing improvements our students need and the improvements that our schools need to make sure that everyone's successful. So there's got to be a different way to do it. We just haven't struck the right balance yet.
So on the one side, we talked about teacher pay, and it seems like that's a positive thing that's heading in the right direction, trending in the right direction. Looking into the survey about working conditions, only 27% say they're satisfied with current conditions. That's a bit worse than 2024. Are the states and districts doing enough to address the working condition issues at this point?
A lot of things go into working conditions. Right. When you think about an educator working conditions, you're talking about the variety of educators, first of all. We represent most of the educators in a school building, and most of the educators are outside of the school building. So we're talking about bus drivers, right. Food service workers, nurses, counselors, custodians, constables. We're talking about educators in the classroom, educators who are specialists outside of the classroom. So all of those conditions could be different. So we could be talking about just the time it takes to create lesson plans and to grade the papers and to deliver the instruction, the time it takes on the back end to grade the papers and enter in the information that you are recording. We could be talking about nurses who are also, busy doing the things that they need to do to provide the services for their students and then put that information in the computer. Food service workers are doing different things to deliver what they need to do for students. So all of those things inside of the building are what we talk about as far as working conditions go, but also outside. How much time outside of the workday am I doing work that has to be done so that I can be prepared for the next day for the students? Analyzing my performance in the classroom. If I'm a classroom teacher like I am, I'm thinking about how I can deliver instruction better based on, results of an assessment or a summative or a formative assessment that I might have given my students. There's a lot of things that go into satisfactory working conditions. The conditions of the buildings themselves mm-hmm. are also working conditions.
Right.
Do my windows close? Is it drafty? Is the temperature proper for the students to be able to concentrate and to do what they need to do? So all of those things are encapsulated in what we're kind of calling working conditions. And so some of them are being addressed in the ways that we can, and some of them are things that are like constant nagging little things mm-hmm. that could be tweaked, just taking some things off our educators' plates. Do I have to be the one to take attendance? Is that someone else who could do that? Do I need to do little kind of the administrative tasks that maybe someone else could do that will free up some time to allow me to meet with my fellow educators and colleagues? There's a lot of things that we could be doing differently. I think we just need to kind of hone in on what it is and how we can change and improve working conditions for educators.
Is that why it's a tough number to move the needle on? Because it's a moving target with a lot of different targets. So that's a lot going on. The couple of moments there you spent describing all that, and that really just kind of is the tip of the iceberg.
Oh, absolutely. I haven't even, we didn't even delve to everything. There's a lot of moving parts when you're talking about working conditions. So, you might be focused on analyzing just responsibilities or even time concerns, but that doesn't talk about building conditions and issues like we talked about.
Technology.
Technology. It doesn't talk about student behavior concerns that we've been talking about for a couple years now either, that all go into being satisfied with your job.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned the student behavior piece. That's where I wanted to go next, because that's one specific area where teachers did seem to have some concerns, at least expressed in the survey. It found about 58% are at least somewhat more likely to leave education over student behavior concerns, about the same as 2024. You mentioned this has been something that's been talked about over the last couple of years. There was a student behavior and school climate task force that offered some recommendations about a year ago this time. Are you hopeful that there's some improvement on the way, that there's progress being made?
Yeah, so we're definitely hopeful. The conversation needs to continue. Again, we're just scratching the surface on what it is that our students need in the schools. We've been talking about mental health services for a while, and knowing that, providing services to our students to make sure that they are comfortable with themselves and that they're healthy and happy, and that school is a safe place for all students is important. But then thinking about when it's not, or when a student is not at 100%, mm-hmm. what can we do to lessen the impact of that student's behavior on the others in the classroom? And just, again, working to try to make sure that we're helping to address the needs that the student might have. So it's hard because their behaviors manifest in a lot of different ways.
Right.
So I think for educators, when we're talking about student behaviors, we're just trying to lessen the impacts that some of those more wayward student behaviors might have on the class or the student themselves, because it takes away from instruction time mm-hmm. and the time that you're able to create and strengthen the relationships that you have with your students is kind of impacted as well, because you're, addressing the needs of the students as they occur. So I think if we continue to think about what mental wellness looks like for every student and for our educators as well, I think we'll be seeing, you know, a positive track to trying to lessen some of the behaviors that we're seeing in the classroom that distract from what we're doing.
Are there any kind of low-hanging fruit issues in that realm that might be, again, there's no quick fixes, but there's some things that could be done maybe more immediately to kind of, again, get the ball rolling?
Well, one of the things that we've been seeing in some nationwide reports and some things that have been happening in other states is kind of limiting the use of cell phones, mm-hmm. or even banning cell phones, bell to bell. So the students have to, you know, put their cell phones away so they're not distracted by all the things that your phone can do, and they're really focusing on what's happening in the classroom and interacting and socializing with the people in the classroom. Mm-hmm. So just kind of lessening the distractions, I think, is one way that we could start to address some of the issues that are happening.
I was going to say, on that topic, I mean, there have been some efforts there. There have been pilot programs and things like that. Is perhaps the key maybe something that's just more consistent across districts, that everybody feels like they're operating under the same structure with cell phones?
Yeah, I think if we could get the districts to kind of sit down and talk about what it looks like to be in agreement as far as cell phone policy, so we could have a consistent, like you said, a consistent use or in this case, you know, non-use of cell phones during school time, and we could see, does it really make the difference that we know it does? Can we start there and just, you know, start with that one thing and then continue to build upon the difference that you'll see in the climate in the community and the schools? I think that would be a great start.
Some ideas educators in the survey support pursuing include supporting smaller class sizes. That was 97%, kind of an obvious one, right? Mm-hmm. Supporting additional instructional staff in high needs classrooms, 93%, and an increase in recess time and other play-based learning in K-3 classes, 83%. Do you see a path forward to make any or all of these happen?
Yes, I definitely, you know, we did just talk about the cell phones, and that would be a great way to start, but having additional support in our schools would be great as well, because then we could use those resources to really address the student needs. And that's one thing that we could think about doing. How do we get more personnel in our schools to help to kind of alleviate some of the issues that we're seeing? And then the last one you talked about was play. And I would argue that play should be something that we really strive for, not just K-3, but, you know, maybe even K-8, because mm-hmm. everyone needs that unstructured time and the ability to use that time to learn how to socialize and to interact with other people and to just kind of, you know, take a break and relax too sometimes. I think play-based learning is important. That's how students best learn. You know, we think about how the brain is formed, and play is how students learn. And so for us to be able to give that time to them to devote to the way that they actually truly learn best would be fabulous. And you would see a huge result if we were able to include play-based learning and instruction, and then more recess time would be great as well.
Is it fair to say that the smaller class sizes is probably the toughest one to get to?
Yeah, I would say that it would be. It's not insurmountable, but, you know, again, you would require more educators to be put into the classrooms, you know, so that you could have those smaller class sizes and you could address the student needs. So we would just be working, you know, in this time where we know that all states are facing an educator shortage, we would just need to make sure that we're attracting educators to Delaware and helping to keep them.
One of the things that was in the survey as well was a question about school district consolidation. There seemed to be some trepidation among those who responded to that. The Reading Consortium is working on that right now. Where does DSEA stand on consolidation and its potential impact on teachers?
Well, the survey results were based on a question that kind of mirrored what Maryland does, and they have districts based on the counties. So
right.
If we were thinking about having, you know, three districts because we have three counties in Delaware, what would that look like? Mm-hmm. How would we be able to distribute resources and educators? What would it look like to provide services for students based by county and not by district? And our members aren't really solidly behind the idea one way or the other. Mm-hmm. I think that there needs to be more conversation about what it looks like. And just making sure that the districts are resourced in the way that they need to be, staffed in the way that they need to be, funded mm-hmm. Equitably, and, you know, just to provide for stability for students if we were to go in that direction. There's a lot of concern around just the little puzzle pieces that you would have to put together to make that work and to make it sustainable. So I think the conversation needs to be had about what that looks like, mm-hmm. if that's where we're looking to go. We have a lot of issues in consolidation that we would have to address before we could get educator buy-in. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of questions that need to be answered. But I wouldn't say that we're not open to having those conversations.
But I think it feels like before any of that can happen, there's that one issue that's kind of looming over everything, which is the work to reinvent the education funding formula that's going on right now. I'm curious, where do you see that process intersecting with teachers and their needs and their concerns?
Well, again, I think the one thing that educators want as far as funding goes, we just need our funding to be predictable and we need the funding to be stable and we need it to be equitable. So mm-hmm. if we're able, again, to provide the resources that our students need, make sure we're meeting our educators' needs as well, I think the conversation just needs to be how can we best do all those things? You know, how can we hit all those targets to make sure that the funding system that we get is better than the one we have because we know it's not working? Mm-hmm. But to address the concerns that we do have, making sure that it's equitable, meeting the needs of those students who might come from somewhat less resourced schools or disadvantaged circumstances, to make sure that those needs for those students are being met, making sure that the educators in those situations have the resources they need to meet those needs, and just making sure that our students are successful no matter where they are, no matter where they come from. I think those conversations are the ones that we're interested in having.
Is the hope that if the funding formula gets done well, that a lot of the other things we've been talking about can move forward under a more solid foundation?
I would say yes, yes. So if we were able to get the funding situation to where we know it would work best for all students and all educators, I think that we could then start to put those other pieces in place.
So this is survey is done about a year after the previous one was done. Mm-hmm. So I'll finish with a basic question. Are you more or less optimistic than you were a year ago based on what you see in this survey and what you're seeing on the ground every day?
I'm optimistic because I know that our educators are more satisfied, which is always where you want them to be. You know, so I'm optimistic that we're making the small changes that we need to. I'm optimistic that we're also looking down the road at larger changes and again, working to make sure that everyone in the system is having their needs met. I think that's where we need to be.
Thanks to Delaware State Education Association President Stephanie Ingram for joining us on The Green this week. And we wrap up this week's show next with Arts Playlist, where we preview the Delaware Art Museum's latest exhibition on the art of illustration. This is The Green on Delaware Public Media.